I found it really helpful to get to know the material that's already out there. Listening to audio recordings, books, instructions, all the material kind of gives an overview of what to expect. Sort of the range of fun stuff, challenges.
Yeah, we got access to some preview material from MCTB2 that was quite useful.
We kind of got a lot out of it in terms of a personal development or finding out what I guess my speciality would be. My magic class would be, as we were joking about earlier. I think it really helped me. It helped me unlock some internal things about what my specialities are, what my specialisms are. I think those start to come to the fore later in the practice.
For me, one reminder that would have been useful, and I was giving it to people in the beginning, and then when I got stuck, completely lost myself, that was this why so serious. I mean, I think we all tended to bring a bit the Vipassana Buddhist retreat attitude as a basic, and realizing that there is no cheating. I mean, you can cheat as much as you want, and if it works, it wasn't cheating. If it doesn't work, you tried, and that you have to go wild, and if I could do it again, I would bring more magical toys, because I rediscover a bunch of fun. I mean, I used to read tarots and a bunch of other things, but now it was really becoming like, this is really cool. I look at this card, and my practice was kind of shaping around a random card, and it would really influence me a lot. So have fun, go wild, bring toys, go with the technique in the beginning, and then if it gets boring, change it as long as it, to make it interesting, because I mean, this is also about getting weird results, and I lost it after a while.
Yeah, I found it helpful to prepare. Like, are there any practices that you'd like to try out in a concentrated state that involve visuals? I, for instance, brought some plant seeds that I worked with. Not so successfully, but it was very fun to try that out. In a concentrated state. And I also say, try to get clear about why you want to try this out. Like, what's your motivation? That gets helpful underways as well when you sort of end up in the space where you ask yourself, okay, why am I really doing this? This can be challenging. You do many hours, it can get boring. And know why you want to go here and go back to that if you sort of need a refresher.
Or on the other way, if you're like me, you discover midway why you're doing that and what you're good at and what's fun. So it's also possible. In my case, bring toys and ideas and be completely ready midway. Like, okay, I'm crap with vision, but I'm great at volume, so I will play with that. So there is, I mean, different personality types. So for me, a high expectation completely blocked me, and midway, like, fuck this, I do this other thing. It works.
Something that I liked about the fire casino as an object of meditation is connected to what has been said before. It's a very versatile object, meaning that you can turn towards samatha and develop that aspect of your meditation. You can turn towards pure vipassana as much as you can, but that's not really possible probably. I mean, you can't do 100% vipassana with this, I assume, but you can develop that aspect as well. And there's also this aspect that allows you, at least that was the case for me, that allows you to fly over magical waters. So if you want to dive into the magical realm, you can also use this object as a gateway. So it's like a triple gateway to different aspects of meditation practice. There must be other aspects to it too that will enable you to delve into other aspects of meditation practice, but I haven't discovered that yet.
I think I sort of echo statements made earlier that if you can bring an intention, it's going to obviously help. It's the classic thing, it is our will or it is my intent. Otherwise, your subconscious will do it. If you don't give your subconscious something to work with, it's going to throw up random images. Whereas if you're actually, if you've brought something to the table that you want to work with, something specific, and you can channel that during the meditation, you've got a lot more chance of that actually coming up, especially as you get further and further through the sort of 2 week or beyond cycle. I think that's when your results, specific results, should start sort of showing up.
And something that we've all expressed off record, but now it should probably be on record as well, the fire kasina is a beautiful object. Mm-hmm. It's got exquisite detail that changes over time, so it's really immersive. It's one of the best, one of the most beautiful objects that I've used to meditate. So that's a big plus for this.
I wanted to echo the sentiment about playfulness and the way that you can use this object in so many different ways. Like there's the kasina, there's the sparkles around it, there's the gray, there's the black. You can go into the sparkles, you can go into the splotches that move, you can go into colors, you can go into your mantra and develop your mantra further. And I would encourage people to play with what their mantra is and combine mantras and make them louder, get more excited about it, less excited about it. Like the whole like one way Vipassana mentality doesn't really apply here. Lie down if you want, sit up if you want to. Get playful, try stuff out, do whatever is engaging for you at that time.
Yeah, so I didn't expect that it would bring me so quickly into a concentrative state. For me, it was quite helpful now looking back, because it was often quite high or very intense in terms of emotions and everything which was being stirred up, to have good counter rituals for myself, which I could hold on to. It was very helpful for me to speak with others and also have my own practices, such as the yoga I've been doing, or some just worldly stuff as taking walks and washing myself, just like kind of basic stuff, but which helped me to ground. Looking back, I would definitely put more kind of flavor into these side off cushion stuff, because they really helped me to meditate also.
Yes, what's interesting is that after concentration has built up a little bit, the nimitta kind of stays off the cushion. So it is possible to carry it with you doing other activities like yoga or sitting in a bathtub, and still have some residual in your field of vision you can work on, or you can get creative. So for example, if in the room you are in, you have a light bulb, you can use that instead of the flame. So we had flames in the common room, and then you can just get creative with everything, anything that will stimulate your retina. And the nice thing about the light bulb is that you can just point it at your eye and turn it on with the switch for 1 second and then turn it back off. And then you have this extremely strong and extremely big thing to work on for some minutes. So maintaining concentration is key. Other grounding practices that you can use. I've done also yoga. I've taken warm baths when I felt that I needed to take a break. Qigong is really good. You can, for example, learn the 8 brocades sequence, which takes about 10 to 15 minutes. And for me, that was a really nice way to interrupt the sits. And walks were also great. Particularly here, we had access to a big forest that was our own private space. The castle comes with several hectares of forest, and walking through it and the patterns in the vegetation and in the grass, the branches of the trees were extremely fascinating to go through, to immerse myself in, and then coming back on the cushion, many of those images would come back dreamlike and make the murk rich and take on patterns of the stuff I had seen through during the day.
For me, what was what I realized a bit too late maybe was that there's also like that it's possible to meditate while lying down or while standing or walking. which I, from other retreats, I usually had to sit. So it's been very exquisite, actually, to experience the meditation lying down. For the nights, what I found really helpful when I was stuck kind of in something, I would use the sleep or the night to pay attention to my dreams and to see if I could get some answer, how to move on further, because concentration would just be kind of built that while sleeping, it would just naturally, I would just naturally get also some good images during the night.
For me, and I got into it late-ish in the retreat after I got okay with staring at a mark that didn't do much for a few days, was realizing that it has the same vague random pattern of a lot of things around. So I could go out in nature and stare at musk and stay there for a few minutes and then get the same kind of visuals, or doing it with clouds or with the leaves or with the wood pattern. So for me, it was really interesting to be able to carry on this practice that I could do with eyes open and get something similar, that in my case is I don't get much, but I get the same not much in both places, and in the peripheral vision there are things that start moving and coalesces a bit, and the more I defocus, so to transfer this. And then I started getting how it is to read images in the smoke of fire or in tea leaves or something. So this idea that any random pattern, a random thing of pattern, if I defocus and allow whatever happens with the mark to arise, I can start seeing something there. And it was quite interesting to be able to do it in nature in full light.
There is something very simple and very basic about the fire casino, which is that after having looked at the flame, so you close your eyes, what you see is not an after image. It is like an imagery sent by your mind. You can imagine, you can think of it that way, which implies that you can interact with it, treat it as a personality, try to interact with it, and it will respond. It did to me. So for example, when I just issued a command, it would not react all that willingly. But when I complimented the command with a please, then it would react. And at one point, because of this interaction, spontaneous metta arose in me, and I started complimenting it, and it reacted to me in a joyful way, I thought. So to repeat, this is not an after image, it is a kind of a fairy, think of it that way, and try to interact with it.
I sometimes realized if I would want to change something in what I saw, that it would react much more responsive if I would talk to it in my mother tongue.
Yeah, so getting into the specifics, I think the first day or so I spent with just watching the nimitta and that disappear and so on, going through its cycle. And then the first sort of question came, so how do I get colors? How do I get this to do something? What's the next step here? And that was the first barrier that I had. And the solution I found was going just back to my normal concentration practice, getting really relaxed. And suddenly colors appeared, like popping up, some flames go around. And I found it also helpful to kind of enjoy that, get emotional about it. So this is beautiful. And just let it play itself out for a while. And then you can start to interact with it.
It's also good to question like what progress really looks like, and there can be this thing like kind of a Vipassana retreat where what feels like backwards progress is actually forwards progress, and there can be a common cycle where you'll have colors and everything will be going great, and then you'll be back in the gray or back in the black and thinking that you're screwing it up or you're not making progress, but actually you are. And so having a fascination for what's going on and the fact that there are these cycles where, you know, the whole thing seems to get reset, it's also interesting to play with.
For me, like having to deal with quite intense emotional stuff, it was very helpful to use the Buddhist technique of feeding the demons. I also, it was very joyful for me because I had such a strong visualization skill at that moment that it worked quite easily. And yeah, for any dark nights, I can.
I have chronic headaches. That got really intense the first week. And what was helpful there was to go back to the body and not work so much in visual space. But also, I mean, the work with the casino and the colors kind of continues while they do that, or it can continue. So that plays out in the background. You can go there somewhere, but sort of focusing in on details that brought some eye pain and so on. And it's better now after 10-ish days. But yeah, that was a challenge.
And if you feel stuck, an orgasm can help.
Well, going back on the matter of headaches, I found that they correlated quite strongly with the cycles. And actually, and I got it in the last couple of days, there could be a dialogue with them, with other things, and they would point a place where there would be a tension that could bring attention. When I started doing my practice in a more volume, space-oriented way, there was a contraction in the bliss body, in the space, and I could work with that, and they would sometime release quickly for whatever they're doing. Headaches, that is rare for me. I mean, usually I get the headache and I have to sleep on it. And that was quite interesting, plus realizing that if I was deep enough, I mean, it could hinder me to go in a concentrated, somehow blissful state, but if I manage to get there, the headache becomes this sensation of pressure or contraction, but it's not actually painful. And then I would think, oh, wow, it's gone. And then I would go out and try to do things in normal life, like, oh, no, it's a migraine, but in a jhana, I wouldn't. So that it was interesting, like, they would suck, but not for practice, for everything else.
You just enjoy the fact that this practice, compared to dry vipassana, just gives you so much freedom. You can go out and have a walk, you can set your own timetable, and as long as you don't go and do anything too, I don't know, disruptive, you can actually hold, you don't realise that you are actually managing to hold that concentration. So even if you go outside, you can come back, you know, you can lie down, sit, you can take any number of positions, use any number of light sources, and yet that concentration does still build and build and build, and I don't think you don't realise how much it builds until you start to try and power down as the retreat comes to an end, and you realise quite how much you've built up, because you feel it dropping off and you feel reality come crashing back in waves, and you didn't quite realise how powerful the practice had been. So, and such an enjoyable kind of practice compared to a very dry vipassana. It's revelatory in that aspect.
Yeah, and like as has been said, it's a very flexible practice. One of the things I found myself doing was maybe fire casino wasn't the best sort of element for me to work with for this particular retreat because of various intense personal stuff going on, and I found myself spending quite a lot of time outside the main practice room and practicing in the woods. I spent a lot of time sitting by a tree next to a stream, and actually ended up probably doing more work with earth and water than fire. But as has been said, you after a certain point you carry the nimitta with you, so it was fine to kind of go into these different environments which had a different emotional atmosphere to them, but still be able to take the object along with me and do the work there instead in a slightly different context.
Yeah, similarly, I worked particularly on days 5 and 6, I worked mostly on exploring the hypnagogic phase of sleep. So I spent one night trying to stabilize the phase of sleep between full wakefulness and full sleep, in which disconnected internal monologue happens and images, extremely vivid photorealistic images, surface. So several of us were led to explore things that were not theoretically on the menu, because this technique seems to stir up a lot of different things, and it is very versatile and it can be adapted to different goals, as has been said before.
Yeah, as you were saying, one of the most delightful things for me was watching everybody begin to become the natural specialists in whatever field of exploration that they are. Everybody's natural talents and inclinations began to come out. Everybody started figuring out like who they were as a practitioner of deep concentration, of magic, of internal state exploration, of energetics, of colors, of moods, of spaces, of traveling out of body, of seeing visions, of all kinds of things, of contacting entities, of doing rituals. So that was just delightful to see all of us coming more into our own as what our natural gifts are and exploring those and what we needed for ourselves. I think your point about elemental balance is a really important one. So if you just do Fire Casino, it's easy to get elementally imbalanced. And one of the things that we chose this place for is that it had water nearby and a nice forest. And then there's the lawn for earth. And so having a sense of the strong presence of other elements around that you can appreciate, the lake to walk around was really nice. The trails and the woods, the space. I think that helps, because otherwise you can get elementally imbalanced. But I think the practice brings an appreciation of the elements and what it even means to balance them and what they are and all of that. So the other thing I really like about the way this is set up is that we just had practice periods where you could find your rhythm of what you needed at that moment. If you wanted to sit long, you could sit long. If you wanted to recline, you could recline. If you needed to walk or do something else or take a break or even talk with people to process something or share an experience and get it off your chest so you could forget about it and move on, or have some chocolate or have a cup of tea or some coffee or whatever, or a nice walk outside when you needed. Because I think allowing people to find their own rhythm gets you more in touch with yourself, how your mind is, what you need. And I think that's really a valuable skill in and of itself. When I think about the old practitioners back in the day, they didn't have clocks, they didn't have schedules. They felt it, they figured it out. And I think that learning to read yourself and being a more responsible adult practitioner makes us all stronger. I think it's a good skill to cultivate. It makes us more intuitive and aware of our own needs when the brain chemicals are just gone and you've got nothing left, when there's suddenly a whole lot of power and resilience and you can just keep going, well, you know, all of those things. So that was really nice to see.
Even though the Fire Casino is primarily a visual object, it's got this synesthetic quality to it. I realize that it interacts, for example, with my tinnitus. There is this dual play going on, and also it interacted with the energy flow in my body. So that was an avenue for exploration, which I did not really go deeply into, but that is one thing that could be explored, this synesthetic aspect of this primarily visual object.
There is a dimension that I didn't quite explore fully, but it seemed to have potential to me, is locating your body with respect to the visual field, either letting the visual field wrap around me or imagine that I was physically present to the scene, and locating my body physically in the field made the experience much more intense, and it seemed to have some potential. I wonder if somebody has explored this in more detail than I have.
I think it's been said already, but I appreciate noticing clearly that no pain, no gain of retreats can be bullshit. I mean, this was very hedonistic in a way. We could sit, stand, walk around, lay down. We could sleep as long as we wanted. We could eat whenever we wanted. We had incredible meals. We had chats where we would compare notes and stuff, and still things worked. Maybe could have been more concentrated, who knows, but I don't know, today I was really, really spacey and pretty, if that means being concentrated, I was really concentrated. It felt like I was really high. So I really enjoy this. That retreat for grown-ups, meaning, yes, we can also enjoy life, and that's still practice because we are all here. We took our break from life to do this. So I always thought that. Now I have this example in my face, so I can say, not really, I know, I was there, so from now on, I want this.
I can also add there that I did go to the other extreme at times. Like, I wanted to do one strong determination sitting. I don't know how long it was, but it was painful. But there was also obvious good effects. Like the concentration got stronger and so on. So I played with that. And also just sitting down in a really comfy chair, facing out. And I might add there that that was a way to get more into visions, like visionary content, getting into this daydreamy space and playing with ideas that just pop into your head, letting that play out and interacting a little bit with it. The chair was good for that. And I kind of brought that sleepy state with me to the cushion when I sat down and so on.
So would that be like, you sit at the candle to build up enough energy to then be able to take back to the chair with you to actually play with? So you're sort of building up a reserve at the candle, playing in a more reclined type position?
All kinds of varieties. I tend to actually go to the chair first, like to get comfy, let myself space out a bit, and then I went and sat and built up concentration. And then I could lay down for a while until I felt like, no, this isn't going anywhere. And I sat up and tried to just push the limits a bit with the concentration, and then go to the chair again and just have that interact sort of with each other, those concentrated states and the more image, space that also comes up. And the fun stuff for me was finding a way of letting those interact. Like, I typically don't get that many visuals in meditation, maybe like one image popping up. And here I found a way of kind of working with that, like series of images coming up. That was kind of the way I worked with it. So there are some images that come up, they kind of open a door and you can go in there and you play with it in a sense and that you're creating what is going to show up, but it also comes to you. And then you can nudge it a little bit that direction, maybe that I can go this way with it, and also the association comes up. And suddenly you're in this space where a lot of things just happen, like a series. Feels more objective, like you're not doing it. And a really fun territory, that was pretty much how the first I got, is when you get that kind of daydreamy-like stuff start to imprint itself on the limited space. I typically got that as more, like you have the, for instance, the murk or a set of colors, red, magenta, pink, greenish. It just hangs around in space, and you get into this daydreamy state, and suddenly there's an imprint, poof, image imprints itself. And then you go back to more fantasy land, and then poof, oh, there's suddenly another image. That is fun in itself and so on, but I also enjoyed and found it useful to somehow gain some information from that. Could be anything, like insights about my life, or what should I do next in my practice. And as I kind of played with that and immersed myself in that, some part of me really enjoyed it and just kept on flinging some images and stories at me. That, I had a lot of fun with that. Yeah. And I take that with me, actually, those insights and so on. Okay.
Yeah, it was a little surprising how it worked out with visuals ending up being in a different place. Like, rather than in the visual field, you end up in this sort of dream field instead. And so interacting with the visual field can sometimes launch you into this much more dreamy, ghost-like place for a little while. where you're sometimes not aware, sometimes are, sometimes can control what's going on, sometimes not. So it was more like the visual field was a gateway to this dream realm that you'd eventually come back from, and you're in sort of moving in between these two worlds.
Yeah. And some of it is just nonsensical, doesn't make any sense. But some of it kind of makes sense, and you can use that. And that was kind of the area that was that I was playing with. Some things are obviously sort of doesn't mean anything, and the other stuff is like it could mean something, and I take it as a reality for that sort of time being.
Yeah, and it's totally interesting to see how the two worlds can interact. Like I had sort of these dream sequences where I would be meeting with people in the house and having conversations, and they might do something like switch on a light, and then I'd be back in the visual field and it would be filled with light for a minute, as if they'd sort of flip the light, switch it back in the visual field. So this, yeah, this sort of trippy dreamlike interaction space is somewhere you can get into.
One thing I had at one point is my Merc space got torn the way a piece of cloth might be torn by a knife, and through the tears in the cloth space I could see the dream imagination space. So it's like I think for somebody else they were alternating in time, so they can both mix in time and space and the visual space. When you were saying imprinting, I was wondering if you meant that what arose first in imagination space kind of fell into the visual space and informed it, and it became, and there is a lot of stuff to investigate there from the point of view of when is the image that is coming up completely out of control, like in the hypnagogic experience, when is it under your control, how clear is it photorealistic, when an image that arises first in image space kind of starts to imprint itself in the Merc. How does its visual quality change? For example, does it take the main color that the Merc has? So something that first was imagined in full color kind of takes these weird colors that the Merc has. There's really a lot to investigate there, much more than I had the time to do in 10 days.
There is also a third zone between the visual zone and the dream zone. We can call it the twilight zone. It is also another region that you can play around with. So it's like it starts off as a visual zone, and then you project something into it. Let's just call it awareness, consciousness into it. And it comes alive. It gains reality, and then as it gains reality, it becomes immersive, and you tend to lose control and end up in dreamland. Well, the first few tries, and then after a while, you learn to put your head into the dream space, and then pull it back out and play around in that intermediate zone. So that's a fun. It's like the shoreline where you can play.
It's a very nice metaphor.
Of the various spaces you mentioned, that was one of the things I found the most interesting. So initially, what you see is the retinal burn space, where you see the purple candle and the reverse colors or complementary colors of all the background images. And then you see the red dot, which gets the blue and the yellow and the red or the green or whatever the nimitta gets. But then sometimes my candle after image retinal burn space would interact with that, even though they seem to be different things. Like sometimes the candle became like a person's body under the head, which was the nimitta. Sometimes when I was going through some of the darker stuff, the purple background would actually get all jagged and strange around the nimitta, and that seemed to be something distinctly different from the Merc, because it wouldn't last very long, and then it would disappear, and then the Merc would show up. And then the Merc sort of is a bowl-like background around behind which the nimitta moves, has its own space to it. And then as things would progress, the Merc space or the bowl space or the screen space could interact with the nimitta, and they could sort of enter the same space and be getting in front of each other, behind one another, like altering one another. Sometimes the Merc would wrap around sort of the nimitta, and then there was the space in between me and the murk space, which sometimes would start getting lights in it or start becoming more three-dimensional or get cones or rods or spirals or rays or other things that were bridging the space between my head and the screen. Then sometimes the murk did strange things, like it would part, like you were talking about. I actually got one point where I got something that looks sort of like a circular waterfall or a sinkhole or a black hole with water, like the purple lines pouring down into it, but on the other side was photo black, like the photorealistic zone where some of the images would sometimes come out of. And so I got to see that, wait, the screen behind the murk space is where the photo space can be, and to see all of those different screens and see how they would interact and then somehow just flash onto full photoreal images, flash onto sort of twilight images that yet weren't pixelated, or to notice that some of the screens pixelate and some of the screens don't, and some of the screens can have both. So like when the molten gold, or the white and gold as we would call it, which would show up towards the top of the visual field all bright and vibrant and wiggly, that's not pixelated, but it might be totally seeming to come out of, so, you know, the black and white or the black and gray or the gray or whatever, which might seem highly pixelated, or the murk space or whatever. And to notice how like one part of the visual field might totally seem photoreal and another pixelated and another molten gold-like, which was more liquid than pixelated, and to see all those three things happening for, you know, sometimes in the same visual field, which, you know, and to think, wow, there's so many interesting parts of our brain that help create the visual.
Listen to that. It is amazing the varieties of vision space that are in this practice. But one thing that strikes me is that you don't have equal access to them all. There are very kind of strict requirements to getting into these spaces. And that's one of the things I noticed on this retreat, where I didn't build up the level of concentration that I did on the last retreat. On the last one, you know, I recognise all of the spaces that you're talking about. This one, I think probably the furthest that I got was the twilight zone. An occasional very vivid photorealistic visions, but which were momentary, very brief, just coming and going. So there does seem to be a price of entry for these different vision spaces, which is concentration. You get into the higher ones by building up the biggest amount of concentration. One of the things that presents is working magically in this arena. So I've had to work with what I was given. I've had to work with what I was able to build on this retreat. And it's been surprising how valuable that has seemed to be, even though, you know, I wasn't able to build up concentration credits as much as I was last time. But that is an interesting thing, because magic is about the means of manifestation. You provide a means for something to manifest. Just because you're not providing the best means, it doesn't mean to say that you're going to get nothing, or you're going to get something that maybe isn't as dramatic or interesting as the very best conditions could be. I don't know, something to think about for me, that one, I think.
You're just providing a black and white TV rather than a 4K Ultra HD, that's all. The image will still appear, it just won't look as good.